This is a KRBN special presentation with candidate for U.S. Senate, Joe Ray Perkins. You can speak with Ms. Perkins now by dialing 646-721-9887.
Welcome to the program. Welcome to a special program. In studio with us today is Ms. Jo Ray Perkins, who's running for U.S. Senate. And she just got off the Lars Larson show, and I'm sure she has a few things she'd like to say. But first of all, I'd like to welcome everybody to the program. And she's with us for the next hour. And you can give us a call right now, 646-721-9887, if you have a question that you'd like to ask her. The chat room is open, by the way, too, at blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. We'll be checking Facebook sites and others, and we take your questions there as well. But Jo Ray, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Robin.
Yeah, I just caught the Jo Ray literally got off the phone with Lars Larson. In fact, when she came into the studio, she was still talking, even though she wasn't still talking.
It's kind of a strange thing.
So do you want to give us a quick summary of what was about?
Yeah, so I had just left the meeting and got in the car and the radio popped on. There's Lars, and there was a debate going on today up in Portland at the Portland City Club, and the only two candidates that were there were Dr. Webby and Jason Conger. And so all I caught was the tail end of Lars saying something to the effect of not resonating with the voters. And then he said something about leadership or something, I don't know. By that time, I was already dialing in. and so I talked to him, and this is what I said, is, if you want to hire somebody to be a fundraiser, vote for Dr. Webby. The job of U.S. Senator is not to be a fundraiser. The job is to lead to do the job of the House and Senate. So as a senator, his job is to do the job as a Senate according to the Constitution. And I said, vote your values. And that has really been what I've been pushing this whole past several weeks now of stop listening to the media, stop listening to the polling data that's almost always skewed. And let's talk about really what the real issues are. Let's talk about what's going on in this country, how we've gotten off track. And we've got to have somebody who's not bought and paid for by the big political machines. So that was about it. And I brought to his mind again, and I shared with the polling data. And so for those of you that aren't aware, the most recent poll that I'm aware of that came out a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week. It was on the fifth or the sixth. Was 607 likely voters, supposedly Republican in Oregon, were polled, but some of those identified as non-affiliated voters. Well, that right there skews the polling data because we have a closed primary. But 14% of those polled identified themselves as liberal, 39% identified themselves as moderate, which is 51% of those polled, and Monica wins in the polling data, Dr. Webby. Except for all the other data that's out there shows that 69% of Republicans identify themselves as conservative. So that's an 18-point spread.
Wow.
And the company that did the polling data, they said, well, they weighted the polling to fix it so it would be more accurate. You can't do that with polls, people. And I happened to, one of the classes I took at OSU happened to be on polling data in respect to the political arena. You can't change a poll to try to make it, the results, to try to make it say what you want it to say. The facts are the facts, and it was done incorrectly. And the other issue that I brought up was in 2012, we had this little thing called a marijuana measure, Measure 80.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listeners, people try to say that Oregon is a liberal state. We are not a liberal state. We have a lot of conservative-minded voters that are staying home. So what happened in 2012, there were roughly 84,500 people more came out and voted against, or total votes, on the marijuana measure than voted for president. That's more than 10% of the number of people that voted. Those were the conservatives who said, I don't want marijuana legalized in my state. but they didn't vote for a candidate because there wasn't a candidate they felt was conservative enough. Vote your values.
Exactly, and it's all too often our representatives, quote unquote, don't listen. They only look at the dollar, and we see that so many times.
Exactly. That's exactly what's going on. So we've got to get back to the basics of what this country is about. And I'm trying to tweet for people to tune in now. Robin's looking
exactly.
at me like, what are you doing? I was trying to do my LinkedIn, but I couldn't figure it out. So we're tweeting out there.
We're tweeting. Yeah, it's kind of a last-minute thing. As like I say, Joel Ray literally came into the studio right at the end of the Lars Larson interview, and so we're just now getting reorganized. But while she's doing that, again, a perfect opportunity to text us or call into the program, 646-721-9887. You can listen to the show as well by dialing that number. And if you want to speak to Joel Ray, just push 1 on your phone, and it will come up on my board, and I will say area code so-and-so, like 541, welcome to the program, and you'll be live on the air with us. And this is your perfect chance to... before the election's coming up on May 20th, to ask Joel Ray a question if you hadn't had an opportunity to do so, or if you've seen her on Facebook and read some of the commentary and you'd like a direct answer, or you're curious about something, or want to know just, or if you're into fancy cars, give her a call right now, 646-721-9887. She's a very good multitasker right now. She's handling a whole bunch of stuff.
I am. While she's doing that, I'm typing this in, and that number again is
646-721-9887.
And there we go. That is now tweeted out there. So if you're out there in the Twitter universe,
tweet us.
I was just at a luncheon earlier today. It was so funny. I'm going. What I don't understand is why is it called Twitter?
Right.
And but we tweet. It's because we don't want to be at a bunch of twits. So why'd they call it Twitter? Why didn't they call it Twitter? Because then we would be tweeting on Twitter.
Right.
Instead of tweeting.
And if you are going to tweet and have therefore tweeted, never mind.
Yeah. So
We need a research grant to look into this further.
That's it. Would you like $1 million research grant?
Yes. Could I have two, please?
Two. You got it. Because you know it's just $1 million.
It's just $1 million.
Oh, two.
Yeah.
That's nothing in the grand scheme of the amount of money that the federal government spends every year. So they're just going to...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit less than studying the migration of snails.
Yeah.
Which I wish I was kidding.
And Robin, that's what comes up is... for those of you out there, they're going, what? What's this got to do with what's going on? It's got everything to do with what's going on.
Exactly.
Migration of snails. $1 million grant in 2012 to study the effect, to study romance novels. Really? That's not the job of the federal government. In fact, I have in my purse more than one copy of the Constitution.
Okay.
And I've read the Constitution a few times. And I haven't seen anywhere in there where it says that the role of the Congress, the House, and or the Senate, is to give out money for people to do research. It's not there. It talks about patents, that we need to protect patents.
Right.
It talks about the arts. I suppose you could slip that into the arts. But we can't afford, this is just runaway spending. You know, when you and I, and Robin and I have talked multiple times, and we talk about how our incomes fluctuate, and sometimes it's really good, and when it's really good, you go out and you buy a few more lattes, or you go out and you buy a new shirt or a new pair of shoes. But when times are tough, you don't do those things.
Right.
You can't go, you know what, I want a new car. Money's really super tight right now. I've got a dollar left over at the end of the month if I'm lucky, but I think I'm going to go buy a new car and increase my car payments. You don't do that. You go, okay, what can I do to either, A, create more revenue,
right,
get a raise, get a second job, a third job, or B, what can I do to cut my expenses? Well, the government, because of the government folks, they just go, well, we'll just raise the revenue, which is translated taxes.
Right.
Now, I just got new tires on Miss Daisy yesterday, and for those that don't know, I drive a Corvette, and I managed to get 44,000, almost 45,000 miles out of my tires. They were actually rated for 45,000 miles, and I got just about every mile I could out of them. and the cord was showing, so it was like, we got to get these replaced. But there's a tax. There's a federal tax on my tires. So we're taxed on tires. If you sell a house now, if you sell any real estate now, there is now a real estate transfer tax that goes to pay for the Affordable Care Act. So you're paying for that. So whether or not your employer is providing for you your medical insurance, if you own real estate and you're going to be selling that real estate, you're going to be paying that federal transfer tax. When you buy gasoline, I'm going to say it's 18 cents a gallon, it goes off to federal taxes. So the government can just raise taxes. In fact, Representative U.S. Rep. Earl Blumenauer from the 1st Congressional District up in Portland wants to increase your gas tax.
Great.
By 15 cents more per gallon.
Or sell the per mile tax.
Or yeah.
Yeah.
So you and I can't just go, hey, I want a raise.
No.
Your employer would go, I'd love to give you a raise, Robin, but we can't. We're happy to make to have a couple dollars left over, because businesses need to have money left over. They have to be able to retool their factories. They've got to be able to replace the computers and buy paper and pay for the utility bills, which go up, and all of their supplies go up. But the government works in this whole other universe, and they just go, well, we'll just raise the taxes on the people. We've got to stop this madness.
Exactly, and especially, correct me if I'm wrong, but businesses that have 50 employees or more are required to have insurance, and so now they're prisoners of the insurance because they have to make that mandate.
If they work more than 30 hours a week.
Right.
I was stopped at O'Reilly's Auto Parts. Sorry about that, folks. Stopped at O'Reilly's Auto Parts a few months ago to buy some new turn signal light bulbs for my car. And by the way, I actually changed them myself. I'm a super multitasker.
She is.
And we were talking about the Affordable Care Act. They said, oh, yeah, our hours got cut back 27, back, and we cannot work any more than 27 hours a week because of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Because not that O'Reilly's is heartless, but because they looked at their books and they can't afford it. Now, I did some quick math and I went, okay, if these people are making $10 an hour and they lose 3 hours a week, doesn't
right.
seem like much, that's $30 a week before taxes. And you take that times 4 1/3, that's $130 a month before taxes. Let's call that take home $100, rounded
right.
up. Well, there's a lot of people that they are barely getting by. And that $100 a month could be the difference between them paying for their car insurance or paying their utility bills. Drastic lifestyle changes. And so now they're trying to figure out how to get a second job, part-time job, to make ends meet. And I said, well, maybe you guys could go across the street and work at Connects. They go, well, we can't do that because they're a competitor. So we can't flip-flop and work here 20 hours a week and go across the street and work at Connects 20 hours a week and have their employees walk across the street and work here to fulfill that mandate. So it doesn't work. The other problem, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh last week coming out driving around the state as I do. An employer called and he has 70 employees. And folks, his premiums to pay for the health insurance for his employees, and he's in Pennsylvania, was going up by $117,000 a year.
Oh, my God.
The deductibles were skyrocketing to up over $6,000. Now, he already paid 75% of the employee's premiums and paid the first $1,000 of their annual deductible. And he's going, I'm going to have to lay off people.
Unfortunately, it sounds like my prediction that America is going to go bankrupt.
America's already mathematically bankrupt.
Right.
This is to sink us even deeper into what is going on.
In fact, correct me if I'm wrong, because I was talking to a person that it was in favor of Obamacare. And he was saying, you know, thanks to Obamacare, I have insurance. He is working part-time, low income, like $10 an hour, has a family. And if I'm not mistaken, because of his income, he qualifies for the Oregon health care. He qualifies for Medicare, Medicaid, or something, or some other programs. In other words, it's not Obamacare that's giving him the insurance. It's stuff that we already have in place.
Correct, correct. So people that, based on their income, based on the size of their family, already qualified for the state low-income health insurance program. And I'm glad that we have those stop gaps there. The problem is that because of the new mandates, it's going to end up costing us so much more money that we just simply cannot afford what is going to happen. And if you want to get a glimpse of what our future health care is going to look like, take a look at what's going on in Canada. Take a look what's going on in Great Britain and England. In Great Britain a couple years ago, one of the heads of their health care had a stomach ailment. I honestly don't know exactly what her stomach ailment was. And she needed surgery. She ended up dying before she could get the simple surgery to save her life. And she worked for the health care ministry in England.
Okay.
And she dies because they're so backlogged. They can't get to them. I have a friend who used to live in Canada. She had a broken nose. That wasn't life-threatening. It took her a year to get in the doctor and get her broken nose fixed. I had a broken nose. I got hit by a foul pitch playing softball several years ago. My husband drove me to the emergency room, and the doctor fixed it right there. Bam, it was a done deal. It wasn't while make an appointment and come back. It was handled.
Yeah.
If we take a look at our veterans, the backlog is so bad, they started destroying documents to clear up the backlog, destroying medical records. Gee, Robin, we don't have any record on you, therefore there's no backlog with Robin.
Yeah.
And if that's really what we want to see, then by all means, be a champion of government-run health care. It's already proven that it doesn't work in the majority of the countries out there. In parts of Canada now, they are buying private supplemental insurance to go to the doctor of their choice. And there's doctors that are going, we will accept this insurance. And guess what? They get moved to the head of the line.
Yeah.
Because they're paying more money. And they're doing exactly what the free market should be doing. And the Canadian government, there's not a whole lot. In fact, they're not doing anything about it because they recognize the problem. And they've even in Canada told their patients, look, if this event happens, get yourself to the U.S., because it can get to you a lot faster than we can. I don't know what they're going to do now or in the next couple of years. And then the Canadian government pays the bill.
Hey, folks, this is why we need somebody in Congress or in the Senate that is actually for the Constitution, is actually understands the Constitution. And because our government right now is lacking those people. I can list a whole bunch of names, Harry Reid being one of them. But what I'd like to do, again, Jill Ray is with us for another 40 minutes. Give her a call, 646-721-9887. Like I said, we're coming up on the elections. And Jill Ray, how is that going, by the way?
Well, I'm encouraged daily. I get a phone call, at least one phone call every day. I'd like there to be more phone calls.
Uh-huh.
And I get emails from people asking questions. They want clarification questions because we can't put everything in the voter's guide
right. That's
out there. A lot of people that are calling me actually don't have internet, and I'm the only U.S. Senate candidate in Oregon that put their personal cell phone number in the voter's guide. And I thought nothing of it because if people have a question, they don't want to have to go through a screener. They want to get the answer. And I've always done that in every business that I've had. I've always had my personal number available to all of my clients. And people that do have the internet, they send me an email and they ask me questions. Would you please clarify this? Some of them I've posted on my website, PerkinsForUSSenate.com. And there's a lot of issues. And thank you, Robin, for all your help on on the, getting their website a little bit more refined. It's fun having different volunteers doing different parts of the campaign, and so we've put a lot of those up there and links to the different issues. And it used to be that you focused on three issues. There's too many to focus on now, just three issues.
Oh, okay.
So in the political arena, they always say, well, just stick to three.
Right.
Doesn't matter what the question is. Pivot back. Pivot back to your top three. Pivot back. Well, I've never pivoted back to my top three. Well, I don't want to say never. I actually did that once during the Willamette Week interview because they weren't going to let me answer the question on the Affordable Care Act, and they asked about trimming the federal budget. And so I threw the Affordable Care Act in there because that was like a open invitation. I've never seen in almost 40 years of voting, come November will be my 40th election that I've had the opportunity to vote in on a general election, so many major issues facing our country simultaneously. And we've got to have somebody who is willing to take a look at all the issues and see what's going on out there. It's not just one issue. It's not just the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act is symptomatic of what has been going on with us losing our freedom.
Exactly. Ranging even from the IRS, which has been switched over as from a tax collection to an enforcement agency.
Yeah. When you have, this actually happened to somebody that my husband knows, he owed some back taxes. This happened several years ago. The IRS came in and shut down his business. Now, I don't know how they expected him to make money to pay his back taxes if they go in and they shut down his means of making money. Doesn't make sense to me.
Well, a lot of things doesn't make sense. Like I say, raising taxes for one thing, which takes money out of the people's pocket. But, you know, it gets back to the question of what are they really trying to do? Obama comes out recently and says that, I don't understand why people don't want health care. Well, like Joe Ray says, it's not they don't want health care. They can't afford health care. That's why people didn't have it before, and now it's the law that you got to require it. And which puts you in another place. If you're trying to start a business, for example, now you got that Obamacare penalty you're going to have to pay. And so that's one of the things you got to look at. 646-721-9887, folks. Give us a call. Joe Ray would love to take your calls right now. It's a good, perfect time to do it. And then if you've never talked on a talk show before, this is a perfect forum to do. When you dial that number, just push 1 on your cell phone. Like I say, it comes up on my board, and I say, welcome to the program. Or you can secretly listen on your cell phone as well, or on the Internet, and give us a call, and we'll be more than happy to talk with you live right now, in color even.
Yes, absolutely. When it comes to health care and how we pay for it, up until the Affordable Care Act was implemented, a person could go to the doctor or a doctor could give their professional expertise away at no cost. And from my understanding, that has changed to where it's very difficult for a doctor to do the same type of pro bono that they used to do. So we need to take a look at that, and for those people that they made choices. Mm-hmm. Those people that smoked, you know, two packs of cigarettes a day and said they could afford their health insurance premium.
Right.
Well, that's a choice that you made, and in this country we need to not be looking to the government to provide everything. You've got at some point to take care of yourself.
Exactly. It's called being responsible, which anymore, you don't have to be anymore. We got the government to look out for you in what I term as a bubble wrap society.
Right. And so when I get to Washington, D.C., I will work with my colleagues in the Senate. Our goal, of course, is we've got to get the majority in the Senate. It is imperative.
Right.
And maintain the majority in the House. We will work to repeal the Affordable Care Act and not repeal and revamp it.
Yes.
Let's get it back to the public, away from the public sector and into private hands. Yes, there needs to be fixes, but let the market fix that. That's what this country's grown on. I will not hesitate to work on doing that.
Well, the one thing I don't hear too much talk anymore that needs to be in the limelight. What the Affordable Care Act has done is opened the door to require citizens to purchase a private product.
Yes.
Okay, today it's health insurance. What's tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow it could be, it's already happening in California. In California, if you update your heating and cooling system, your HVAC, you are required to put in an electronic system so that a central controller, government, can either turn up or turn down your heat or AC so that the grid is not overwhelmed.
Okay.
So that's already there. So is next going to be, no, you cannot buy a home any larger than this size. Well, if you buy a home through HUD, through Housing and Urban Development, underneath the Farm Home Lending Program, the size of home that you can buy is already there, the maximum size.
Right.
Generally no bigger than 1,000 square feet, three-bedroom, one-bath home, 1.5 if you're lucky. That's been in place for years. Most people don't know about these things that are already there. So this has been slowly melting into what's going on. And, again, we've got to have somebody like Joe Ray Perkins in Washington, D.C., going to go, well, let me look this up in the Constitution. Where's it at? Oh, I don't see it listed. Therefore, this is not a role of the federal government. Send that back to the states. That's the states' powers underneath the 10th Amendment issue. And that's what I'm about, is what's the job of the people that you elect? They work for you. So I will be an employee of the voters, not an employee of the government telling you what to do.
The way that founding fathers originally designed it.
What a concept.
Yes.
And we've already proven it's not an experiment anymore. An experiment doesn't go on for 200 plus years to see if it's going to work. We already know that it works. The experiment would be to take us into socialism and see if, gee, maybe we can make socialism or communism work. Well, that's already proven that it doesn't work. So why do we want to go repeat that experiment?
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
646-721-9887. Joy, you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, Monica Lewinsky and others having money.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've known you for 2-3 months now, maybe
longer
than that.
No, since last August or September.
Right. And I have to admit that you are working on a very small, tight budget,
yes,
working your tail off, which is a lot harder than somebody with big bucks, big savings accounts, PAC money, and everything else. You're actually out there, like you say, you wore a set of tires, you know, working hard. Now, who do you want to represent you? Do you want somebody that is attracts big money, or you want somebody that spends tirelessly hours upon hours working, you know, within their budget, and a very tight budget? I mean, that's what I want, is somebody that's, in fact, your background's finance, isn't it?
Yeah, my background is as a financial planner. I used to be a certified financial planner, and used to have 6 different investment licenses, and they're all gone now. And this is not a war on money. I want to make sure that people understand that. And I applaud Dr. Webby for being a pediatric neurosurgeon. I like her. She's a brilliant woman. Her focus is the Affordable Care Act. That's her focus. And she's in the medical field. My focus is a much larger picture. My focus is $17.5 trillion of debt.
Right.
And people's eyes glaze over when we start talking trillions, because I understand you don't know what that means. So, Robin, let's break it down.
Okay.
The government is spending almost $1 trillion more every year than they're bringing in taxes. So they're underwater.
Right.
Well, let's take that $1 trillion and let's break that down. And what does that mean? Robin, if I every day give you $1 million, we'll just spend it every day, $1 million. Every day you got to spend $1 million. And I will stop giving you money when you hit $1 trillion. How long will it take you?
since a $50 bill is pushed for me.
Rob is thinking all the things I could spend $1 million on.
Actually, it'd be impossible for a person like myself to spend $1 million in a day.
But let's just say that. You get to spend $1 million. I don't care if you've got you buy $1 million home every day.
Okay?
So every day you get $1 million. You can go buy a home. You can go buy a yacht. Whatever you want to spend the money on.
Okay.
And when you hit $1 trillion, though, I'm going to stop giving you that $1 million. How long before you think you can spend $1 trillion? You can't even comprehend it, can you?
No, I can't.
It is roughly 2,739 years.
Wow.
At $1 million a day. And our federal government is spending almost $1 trillion per year more than they're bringing in. In 2010, and if you go to the U.S. debt clock, in fact, Robin, if you'll pull that up, I think you just have to type in U.S. debt clock.
Or I can cheat and I can go to...
You can go to my website, except for I really want you to go to U.S. debt clock.
Okay.
I do have the U.S. debt clock widget linked on my website at PerkinsForUSSenate.com. But if you go to the U.S. debt clock, and pull it up. I'm going to walk Robin through a fun little exercise here. U.S. National Debt Clock, that's the one that we want. I think it's usdebtclock.org. Is that what it says?
Yeah, that's what
okay.
it is.
All right. So the current U.S. national debt, as of right now, is $17,521,609,680,690. Okay, it's going up. $55,092 per citizen, $131,222 per taxpayer.
Actually, $151,000.
Oh, I'm sorry, $151,000 per taxpayer. Okay, that's what it is today. Robin, up there on the right-hand side, it says debt clock in motion. See that? Click that little red arrow.
This one right here?
Yep, click that arrow right there. And let's go to 2008.
2008.
It does is it's taking us back in the time machine. So what this says is that on May the 16th, 2008, the federal debt was $9.779 trillion. 9.7.
Right.
Today we're 17.5. That is almost doubled.
Yeah, and what do we have to show for it?
We don't have anything to show for it. Now, when did Obama become president?
2008.
He was sworn in.
Sworn in 2008.
He was sworn in 2009.
Right. Right.
So he had a little bit, and unfortunately, on the debt clock, you can't actually put in a date, so you can only get approximate. So roughly 2009, about this time, the debt was $10 trillion. So it has gone up 75%.
Well, and also,
2009.
Remember that each time the government ran out of money, Obama refused to negotiate any caps on the debt.
Right. Right. And the House passed this last year when we had the quote-unquote shutdown, which was 17% of the government was shut down. And, yes, I do know people in the military that it affected. If they did not have their formal orders of where to go, if they were in between, if they were in the National Guard, they did not get paid during that time, and they did not get back pay, which is a shame. All the other government employees got all their pay back.
Right.
So they got a paid vacation. So what the House did is they said, okay, we're going to pass single-issue spending bills, which is probably what they should be doing. So we're going to pass the bill to say, yes, we can spend money on X, send it to the Senate, and Harry Reid said, sorry, we're not going to vote on it. So they tried to blame it on the Republicans who passed the bill,
right.
And the spending starts in the House. That's in the Constitution.
Right.
So they did exactly what they're constitutionally supposed to do. Send it to the Senate. The Senate is supposed to confirm it, make any changes that they deem necessary, send it back to the House. No, they just simply said, we're not going to let you vote on it. So not only did he not let the Republicans vote on it, he didn't even have the respect of his own colleagues in the Democrat Party to vote on the bills. on the spending bills. And so, of course, we know that they finally got it worked out. And then this last go-around, what happened is the spending bills were passed with no cap, unlimited credit card again. And as we sit here and we watch, so if you'll click back to the time and motion and go back to today, it is just, it is fascinating to see, yeah, to, and then just go to 2014, and we'll bring you right back to today. It is amazing to watch those numbers just go screaming by. And I love the U.S. debt clock, and there's all kinds of other links on that page. So people want to see what's going on. It shows the population. It shows the gross domestic product, shows the payroll numbers, shows total state debt on there. But if you want a simple education on money, go there. I know it's overwhelming, but just go there and take a look. But this is the big number that's really disconcerting, is the gross domestic product number. That is how much in goods and services are being sold in the United States. So it's showing $16.26 trillion. That the debt is now 107% of GDP. And if we look at other countries that have gone bankrupt, their GDP, their debt to GDP was greater than 100% every time.
Yeah. So what happens if the U.S. goes bankrupt?
We don't know.
I mean, Japan or China owns a lot.
China and Japan own the most U.S. debt. Along with mom and pop, your grandparents, some of the listeners out here, every time that you buy a U.S. government bill, note, or bond, you're buying into the debt.
Mm-hmm.
You're lending your money to the government in exchange for a repayment of some interest at some point. So we don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that really means. It's an unsecured debt. So the way that I see it, China can't come in and say, well, you lent us this much money. We demand that now we own the 53% of Oregon that the federal government owns, for example. It's an unsecured loan. So they can't just come in and take something if it's unsecured. It's on the good name of the country.
Which the credit rating is falling from AAA to AA to... I don't know where it's at now.
I lost track.
20 minutes remaining in the program. 646-721-9887. Joe, I also want to, in the remaining 20 minutes, and by the way, folks, there is a good, it's a good time to call in right now, 646-721-9887. We got a couple of days before May 20th voting. And what are some of the highlights? Because you've been practically all over the state now. So what are some of the most common questions that you're being asked or something that you would like to address with this?
Well, one of the questions that people ask me is, Joe Ray, how do we know that when you get to Washington, D.C., you're not going to become like everybody else?
How do you answer that?
Well, I answer it in a couple of different ways. One, not everybody that's gone to Washington, D.C. has had their brain sucked out by the vortex. Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, there's three names that everybody knows, those three fine senators. But I know that I won't, because as a financial planner, what we have to live by is what's called the fiduciary rule. Now, that's a big fancy word that just means I have to be very careful with your money. It's not my money.
Right.
I have to be very careful with the recommendations that I made to my clients, and to be very prudent with that, with those investments. It doesn't mean that, of course, I couldn't see the future, but I had to be very careful and not make a recommendation that was outside of their realm of knowledge and or comfort or what was proper for their personal goals. And I never violated that. When I go to Washington, D.C., and I never gave in to a representative from a company who wanted me to sell their product because I might make more money.
Mm-hmm.
My answer was always the same. Your product has to be at least as good as or better for me to even look at it to see if it's something that I should recommend for my clients. When I go to Washington, D.C., it's that exact same thing. It's not my money. It's your money that the government takes from you. You didn't even give it to them, except for come April 15th when we get to write that ugly check.
Right.
So I already know that I'm not going to violate those temptations because they've already been tested over many, many years of being rude, of people trying to wine and dine me to get the, you know, for me to do business with them. I'm not going to get into the lobbyists. It's very simple, Robin. I've got two copies of the Constitution in my car, one in my purse right now. Very simple. I looked it up. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. I can't see where we should give your firm grant money for romance novels because it's not in the Constitution. I'm going to say no. The other thing I want people to know is that people ask, well, how do we know how you're going to vote? It's very simple. Number one, my staff and I will read every bill first. Now, I know people are going, okay, Joe Ray, the Affordable Care Act is 2,600 pages. It was put out on the table at midnight. They were coming in to a vote at 8 o'clock in the morning. We all know that it is impossible to read the bill, 2,600 pages in 8 hours.
Right.
We don't have to read every page. What we're going to start scrubbing every single bill for is, number one, is it Constitution? So my staff will start reading. They're going to read for constitutionality. The first person that sees, and it'll be broke up into sections, you know, so each person will have a section to read. As soon as they find the stopping point, oops, this is not in the Constitution, it's an automatic no vote. Or if they go, oh, there's an unrelated project attached to this bill, well, that's an automatic no vote. There is a violation of fiscal and social conservativeness in this bill. It's an automatic no vote. So people went, oh, my God, how many votes are you going to vote in favor of? Hopefully not a whole lot, unless it is to roll back these programs that are not part of the Constitution. So that's crazy microphones, people. That, I talk with my hands. You can't see this. But that's what we need to get back to. And I honestly don't remember if it's a senator or a U.S. representative who's proposing a bill or just proposed a single issue bill. What a concept. One issue. In fact, somebody just proposed a bill, and I wish I remembered what it was. And I sound like I don't remember a whole lot, but understand I've been driving all over the state, and I get information, and unless it's in writing right in front of me, I may not remember all the details. But this much I can tell you, the bill was 2 pages long. 2 pages.
Wow.
That is a bill that I could probably go, wow. In 2 pages, I think I can read that personally myself and not go walking down the hall into the Senate chambers and asking my aide, how am I voting on this bill?
Exactly. In fact, let me ask you a question on that. And this is me being naive. The Affordable Care Act, like you said, is over 2,000 pages and was forced very short time to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a constitution or is there a rule that says that there has to be a certain length of time it can be argued with or over? In other words, can you just introduce a bill, you know, 3,000 pages long and say we're going to vote on it tomorrow and have a nice day?
Yes, they can. These go through committee, and then the chair of that committee brings it to presents it to the speaker to be voted on. And the speaker can say yay or nay.
Okay.
If it can be voted on, that's how we got the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is they took it to Nancy Pelosi, and she said, oh, absolutely, we're going to vote on it, and here's the bill, and you're going to vote on it tomorrow, which, by the way, was absolutely, actually the opposite of what Obama said, that when he was running in 2008, he said, and you're going to have enough time to read the bills first.
We're going to be the most transparent government. Every bill is going to come up, I believe, with 30 days or 2 weeks or something like that everybody could look at it, is what he said.
Yes.
And on that thing, on that same issue, as you're saying, you're going to read the bill, you're going to vote no, you're going to be very unpopular.
I will be unpopular with some people and very popular with others, and the ones that I want to be popular with are the citizens of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And then the citizens of the rest of the country. I'm not interested in being popular with all the lobbyists.
Absolutely. 646-721-9887, 14 minutes remaining in the program. Still time to give Joe Ray a call or join us on the website at blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. The chat room is open right now. Joe Ray is checking her Twitter or Facebook.
I'm Facebooking this out right now, KRBN.
Yes, give us a call. If there's something you want to ask her, even or just say hi and see how she's doing. That seems
And if you want to call in and say, hey, Joe Ray, I voted for you.
Absolutely.
I would love to hear that. If you call and say, you know what, I voted for one of the other candidates and this is why, call and tell us that too. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Well, I want people to vote their values. I want people to know why they voted for a candidate. I'm not going to be happy if you say, gee, I voted for candidate X because they were endorsed by this organization. The best endorsement I can have is that of the voters.
Absolutely.
That's the best endorsement. It being endorsed by an organization, it makes you feel good and it puffs you up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be puffed up. I tell people this is a campaign based on faith. I am a Christian. I do not hide my faith-based values at all. I am running because I believe this is a calling on my life that is for me, and it's not for everybody. I have people, I could never do that. Well, that's not what you're supposed to do. You know, we all have something in our lives that we're good at, that we're just naturally prone to. That's what we're supposed to do, is those types of things. And tell us how you're feeling. If there's a problem, you asked me, what are some of the other issues? Jobs, huge,
huge.
These unemployment numbers are a lie. You can make a number and statistics say anything that you want them to say, and mathematicians know that, and statisticians know that. So what's Joe Ray going to do? Well, again, it's back to the Constitution. One of the areas that I am big on and a big push that is on out there is the American Lands Act, and I mentioned 53% of the land being owned by the federal government here in Oregon. Josephine County, the federal government owns 70% of the land. So what are we going to do? Well, if you read the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, very clear, says the federal government can have 10 square miles to be ceded to the government to be the seat. That's Washington, D.C.
Right.
And land that they purchase for military use, and it gives all these things, arsenals, et cetera, but it's all military use, and other needful buildings. Now, the last time that I drove through the Siuslaw National Forest, folks, I did not see any military bases. Didn't see any. Didn't see any bunkers. Didn't see any warehouses where arsenals would be held. So the question is, what are those doing there? Why does the government own that? This land belongs to the people of Oregon in Oregon. The land in Nevada belongs to people in the state of Nevada. And that land needs to be given back. So I will work along with the other senators and representatives who are pushing this. And former representative or state representative from Idaho, Ken Ivory, just like Ivory Soap, you can Google his name, American Lands Trust or American Lands Act, and see what's going on out there. We've got to get this back. We get this back to the states. What ends up happening is now the state and then ultimately the people are in control of this land. We can start logging again. In fact, in the Ninth Circuit Court, which is a very liberal court, there was a environmental group who was trying to bring a lawsuit to stop, I think it was a timber sale, but to stop something, and the judge said you have no standing, which is such an amazing thing for him to say, because these are people that don't even live in Oregon,
right,
and they're trying to stop us from having jobs. So if we can open up the timber, you might not be a timber faller, but maybe you drive truck, or maybe you're a mechanic. Maybe you had a convenience store that serviced that was out in a more rural area where the timber fallers were. Maybe you're involved in the metals industry and in mining, fishing. The numbers at mills, over 200, close to 300 mills have been shut down since 1981, has reopened. There are so many jobs just in those areas alone. If we can, in Douglas County alone, if they will give the land back, just the clearing along the roadways and back, I believe they told me 300 feet, it might be a little bit farther back than that, just the clearing alone so that they reduce the amount of fuel there for fires, would provide, with no government money, it's all private contractors, 10 to 20 years worth of jobs.
And why aren't we doing that?
Because the federal government owns land, because environmentalists keep getting in the middle of it. The federal government does not know how to manage the land. They want us to all live in cities. You know, what's going on down there in California right now, 9 wildfires going on. It's not rural. It's set in California. But yet they're in the hills. They're in the foothills. So they're going to tell us, well, you can't build here. They did that in Colorado last year when they had the big fire. And they said, well, these people really need to be living in town and not out here in the wilderness. And that's part of the push. Evergreen Aviation out of McMinnville actually has a huge 747 jet that's a tanker. And the California government could call them up and contract them and have that jet come in and put that fire out quickly. But they're not doing it. Because they want to prove that because of our intrusion into the wilderness, that we're damaging the environment, and that's why these fires there.
Or the spotted owl.
Yeah, that needed a 200-year-old tree to nest in, and I don't know where the spotted owl lived beforehand. Did it fly around for 200 years waiting for the tree to be old enough? I mean, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course it did. I haven't seen a 200-year-old bird for a while. So, yeah, I know, people. I get a little crazy out there, but...
Well, it's crazy.
It is.
You know, the bottom line is that I hear people all the time say, why should I pay attention to politics? I can tell you who the players of the Ducks games are for the last 20 years and name each member, but why should I get involved with politics? Why should I care?
Politics affects every facet of your life. That's why. The government is involved in everything. The electricity that comes into your home is controlled by the government. The ethanol in your gasoline is controlled by the government. The water that you drink is controlled by the government, fluoridated, non-fluoridated.
Right.
The clothing that we wear is controlled by the government. The shoes on your feet, the shampoo you use for your hair, it's all controlled by the government. Now, that doesn't mean that we want zero regulation. We want things that are going to make sense, and that if it does not, again, meet the Interstate Commerce Clause, that is very clear. Well, the Interstate Commerce Clause is not as clear as what people think. You have to read the intent. But if it is not clearly defined, then it is a state's powers issue. So we need to that's why, because politics affects everything. The government affects everything that we do. In fact, driving on I-5, you know, there was that Stay Alive, Drive 55.
Uh-huh.
And then when the states, people in the states go, well, we want to start driving 65 again, you know, the federal government started blackmailing and said, we're not going to give you money for the interstate highways, which we paid a tax on,
right,
of 18.4 cents a gallon. I remember the exact amount. We're not going to give that to your state if you go over this. States started pushing back and going, no, we're going to go over that. And pushed back, the government gave in and released the money.
Mm-hmm.
More government, federal government intrusion, that's a state's powers issue, not a federal government issue, how fast we drive on the freeway.
And what leads to, as she's saying, more control, look at the Bundy thing and his rant where the armed BLM, why is the BLM armed with machine guns?
Good question. 40,000 federal employees that are not in the military are licensed to carry. Now, underneath the current way it's set up with the federal land, when they're out there in the forest, yeah, I can see them being armed because they're coming up against people that are having illegal crops in the forest and wild animals. So for protection, I can see that. That makes sense. Once we give these lands back to the states, we get rid of the federal, the U.S. Forest Department, the Bureau of Land Management, and the Interior Lands Department. Those three agencies automatically go away because we don't need them anymore. But to have this cadre of 200 armed BLM employees plus snipers showing up because Mr. Bundy said, look, I've been paying the grazing fee to my county, and what the county does with it, and I'm not paying it to the federal government. Why didn't he pay it to the federal government? And yes, I know he lost in court a few times. He was standing on Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the U.S. Constitution, saying this is not legally federally own land. The federal government cannot legally own this land. Therefore, it belongs to the state. The county has jurisdiction over it. I'm paying my grazing fees to the county.
Well, in the last 3 minutes, Joey, is there anything you'd like to say to the voters out there?
Yes. Living in the United States of America and having the opportunity, the legal opportunity to run for office is such an amazing experience. Even more importantly, folks, vote. It is your right to vote. Read your voter's guide. It's also online. You go to the Oregon Secretary of State's website, and it's there. And in fact, Robin will hook it up to the website, so we'll put a direct link so that you can see all of the candidates in the statewide voter's guide. But vote. You know, there are people in other countries, they wait in line for days to get their thumb inked to show that they voted. And they know that they are voting in a obviously corrupt government. But just the fact that they get to vote, so huge to them. And here in America, we go, my vote doesn't count. Your vote counts. I talked at the very beginning of the 84,500 people more who voted on the marijuana measure than voted for president. They made a difference, and they kept recreational use of marijuana from becoming legal in the state. Whether you agree or disagree with that is not the point. The point is that the people who voted make a difference. Your vote counts. Exercise the right that people, men and women, have given their lives for in this country. If you want somebody who believes in a smaller government, who understands pluses and minuses, who understands finances, I'm your candidate. It's not just one topic, folks. There's so many issues going on. We've got to have somebody who's got a wide breadth of knowledge and life experience, a Main Street American who knows what we all go through.
And, Joey, again, how do they contact you, your website?
My website is Perkins4USSenate.com. You could also go to Oregon's Next Senator. .com, and it would get you to the same place. You can call me. My phone number is 541-579-5395. That's 541-979-5395. Feel free to call me, text me, go to my website and email me. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. It's Perkins, the number 4 Senate. It's my Twitter handle.
There you go. And again, like I said, get out there and vote. Joey, again, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you for everything that you've done over the last several months. Your freedom and liberty. From
be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krvnradio.com or email.
Again, check her out, Perkins4USSenate.com, and check her out on Facebook. Stay tuned. This is worth watching.
Thank you.